Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the adventures of Donna and Betty, Community Radio Goddesses. Close your eyes for a few minutes and transport yourself to Radio Land. And now, Donna and Betty.
Yay!
Hey, Betty, I got an idea.
What, Donna?
Oh, you know, the GRC is coming soon, and I have this great idea.
Yeah?
Let's do a workshop. Let's do a workshop about radio theater.
Okay, well, that sounds like fun, but what would we do?
Well, we can talk about script writing and character development.
Oh, and we can call the workshop From Paper to Air, you know, from writing the script to playing the performance on the air.
Well, and then we can break up all the folks into smaller groups and then lead an exercise in writing a script of their own.
I'm really liking it. Well, what else?
Well, how about, in addition to the script writing, we can make them and take them through the steps that it takes from the idea to the paper to playing in the performance on the air. We can also use some sound effects.
Wow. All right. Let's get started.
So, writing paper to air is an idea that was basically exactly that phone conversation that we had on an after conference call that we were on. And we decided that radio drama and radio theater is an art form that is no longer recognized and needs to be revitalized because there's so many ways of telling a story through radio drama.
And there are lots of dramas available already. You can play some of the old radio stuff, that's available online. Or you can write your own script, as we're going to talk about here soon. And you can also download old scripts, which I did for an exercise that I hope we can do tomorrow, a 5-minute mystery. I've got a script for that. Calls for men, calls for women, so that just sounds like so much fun. What did you guys expect? We wanted to go around the room, let you introduce yourself, your station, where you're from, and what you hope to get from this workshop. Sorry.
My name is Kelly Warren. I'm from Madison, Wisconsin, and I am an audio producer. I have produced radio drama in the past, but I'm also a new program director of a new low-power station in Madison. And one of the things that we want to do is I'm going to do contemporary radio dramas. We already have old-time radio happening in Madison. It's fine. It's got its place. But I would like to do and produce contemporary radio dramas. Next. So I just actually wrote a grant to do just that. On workshops and then the outcome produces fourth place. It was sort of actually my model for radio production, radio drama currently is the BBC. I listen to lots of radio drama on BBC Radio 4. And I get a lot of ideas on how to, because they have different things, genres, but they also have, you know, 15-minute serials, hour longs, so there's a lot of variety.
What's your group in those?
There is no group yet.
Oh.
But it with Playwrights Inc. would be their movie workshops that this club I work with. They're stage writers now.
So that's the group that the license is?
Oh, WNPU. Matt, the Presbyterian.
Ah, yes,
nice.
Good.
Nice.
Mary Frances has been out there.
I think we've been for
Brown Broadcast Services. I was going to go back and then come forward.
Leo Mayhew from Two Harbors, Minnesota, the Power FM's KTWH. Still 8 to 10 months really on the air, who knows, but we've already got a group. It's on email, and they've had one meeting with about 6 people show up, with about 25 people. Around town, I think this is a good idea to do radio or audio production. not sure whether just drama original or not. We've got a few creative people that have done scripts that we've seen before on stage that we think would be very analogous and transferable. We've had a group from International Falls that does online radio theater come and do it, kind of a workshop for us. Kind of pumped. We're hoping to use it for fundraising before we're on the air. We need to create something that you can put on our website and listen to before we're on here in full production. So I'm not the, I'm kind of behind the scenes guy, not the actor type. I'm here to learn what I can.
Yeah, your local theater troupes are a great place to start. Your local newspaper writers, especially your op-eds, are a really good resource. In New Mexico, Santa Fe, New Mexico, every year coming up over Labor Day weekend, we have the Santa Fe Melodrama, and that's a live interactive performance where they take the year's worth of events and activities that might have happened and poke fun at all of the figures that are involved in that. So those are the kinds of resources that are available right to you. And most thespians and actors, even though this might be a different and foreign environment for them, they're going to be doing what they love. So it's an easy crossover to have them train up, because it's not really a train up, it's a train over.
Yeah.
Right.
Why?
Because they're generally very opinionated, and their writing styles are recognizable, which then creates that excitement about some of the work that they're doing. So it's a real relationship builder, I guess would be the way to say it. Yeah.
Well, we are going to have an exercise in writing a radio script, which is different than a live performance on a stage script, which is different from a movie script.
Or a TV script.
You buy TV.
Are you going to delve at all into the whole concept of sound effects?
You know, I spent 2 hours this morning trying to download sound effects, and I did not succeed very well.
Because the troupe that did our workshop had full tilt, old fashioned, bank of sound effects, and all of the people in the audience from 10 to 80 were excited to go and
see that happening.
The guy who does that was born.
Sure.
But it's not something that everyone, you know, sitting at home can just start making up without a little research.
Right.
And we had a fun thing in Portland last summer. We have a great thing called Movies in the Park every summer. And one of those movies, from Planet Nine, whatever that movie is, remember?
Yes.
And there was a live troupe that said the lines. They turned off the sound, and they said the lines. And they had, like, fantastic sound effects, persons, more than one, and a live band doing the music. It was such a fun thing. Wow. Oh, man, we just loved it. Let's talk to the lady behind you.
We just got licensed in May, so we're not on the web for
I'm going to ask you to stop for a minute, and I'm going to ask us to take the table down
I
there.
I think we should do that.
This AC right here is really that.
Sit down here.
Yeah. Let's bring this in.
Bring the table down. Do you know where the pink stapler is?
Yeah, it's in my computer bag.
I need to return it.
Well, it's done with.
Yeah, let's all just gather around. Because we do have handouts we'd like to share. Mm-hmm. And you're like,
and now I can hear you.
Right.
Because that AC is so loud. Come in.
Welcome to our lair.
Oh, yes, we can do the shadow sounds. The shadow movement. Who knows what evil works in the minds of men? The shadow movement. Oh, we're going to get to have chairs? Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm thinking.
It's okay. I try not to whack anybody in the head. But no, I guess I whacked your recorder.
That was your recorder.
What? I was talking to Donna. Now everything's upside down. Why don't we distribute these things? And this one I have to play with. Can you make sense of this?
Oh.
Okay. And somewhere, there it is. And here's some websites that we were able to find with scripts and or sound effects. Okay, we'll continue with what you were saying.
So we're new and just got our license. And
you got your license or your CP?
CP.
Okay.
So we're here in general to learn as much as we can about the process.
And where is yours?
It's in Detroit.
So Detroit? Oh, Reverend Ross, yes. She's so my girl.
We're not radio people, so we're learning to be. And I split my time between this and on-air pledge drives, but I was like, haven't done any fun ones, and I've always been interested in radio drama, because love the old time. I love the old time shows, and I am interested in contemporary pieces, because I think it's hard to do. We are not, you know, we're just not trained, I think, to appreciate.
Come on in, pull up a chair.
Here's this.
Here's a chair.
Do you need these copies stapled, or?
Yes, please. Have you stepped over?
These are.
Oh, they need to be sealed.
I saw the title Radiodrama and I thought it was redundancy.
Sorry, got a comedian in the crowd.
Did everybody get their casting evaluation forms?
No.
Okay, let's get those sent out.
Not you?
No.
Okay. And the thing was being noisy. I didn't hear your name.
Oh, I'm sorry, Alisa.
Alisa.
Yes.
I thought it was Lisa.
Did you do the radio drama? Good casting. Everybody have a copy?
Got it.
Excellent.
Okay. So let's hear from you now.
Okay.
I sat by you half the day yesterday, and I don't think I heard a word out of you.
I'm with an existing low-power radio station, WIDE, in Madison.
And you are?
Bob Park. And I have recorded a performance at a local shopping center of a group called Dreamscast, doing some Mark Twain and Shakespeare excerpts, which is in the public domain. I've been broadcasting those on Saturdays, and I'm interested in things produced locally for radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that low-power radio offers a real opportunity for people who would never get on the air otherwise.
It's less intimidating.
Mm-hmm. And you relate, so she's going next.
Okay, I'm Dawn Newman from Fayetteville Community Radio in Northwest Arkansas, 97.3, but we're brand new, too. We're not on the air. We're just at the beginnings. We've already had fundraisers. We're getting our money, just having to cinch a lot of things together. But my background is in drama, and so that's why this looked really, really, you know, like an opportunity to see what you girls have to share and take it back with me.
And our fellow, remember I mentioned.
Oh.
But we have to introduce ourselves, too.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't done that.
Sure. Who are you?
I'm Barry Vogel. I live in Ukiah, California.
I know your name.
Which is about 120 miles north of San Francisco. And I produce a program called Radio Curious that's carried by audio. It's on AudioPort. And about 40 stations around here and there carry it.
Mm-hmm.
It's limited to things which I'm curious about. And I've been doing it going on 25 years, weekly program. And I'm not sure what else should be included in the self-description.
Yeah.
I'm here because you invited me to sit down.
There you go. Sometimes that is the impetus. I wanted to ask you there, Barry, do you know of a podcast called Things You Should Know?
I'm not sure.
I really enjoy it.
And
they could be talking about things you're curious about.
They could, and I could talk about, you know, brief briefly what some of...
Stuff you should know.
Because I'm writing this all down.
I'm sorry, I was...
stenographers do.
Stuff you should know.
No, it's actually a great podcast.
Okay. We'll come back to that, okay?
Yeah, basically what I was going to say, I could just give a synopsis of some of the programs, not the 530 that are on my website, but a few.
Norm.
I'm Norm Stockwell. I'm from WORT Radio in Madison. And, we've done a lot of things over the years, including hosting some radio drama groups. We don't currently have a radio drama program coming out of our stations, but we certainly have learned some lessons from doing it over the years. And I wish that the folks from WDRT were here.
Dirt people?
In Viroqua, because they have a current group doing radio drama at their station. Maybe someone will show up here.
Talk about how you got started with your show, Inner Side.
That's not ours.
Isn't that you?
No.
Oh, no, ours was
we did one called Earplay, and we had one called R. Bean's Voice Theater for a while. And the model at our station has always been somebody comes with a proposal for a program, and then they gather together people. Kelly's show airs on our station, and sort of, in some ways, kind of grew out of Wart. And is probably the best thing in town right now in Madison for people who want to do any kind of long-form performance radio stuff.
Great. Donna.
I'm Donna DiBianco. I'm from Santa Fe, New Mexico. I'm affiliated with, I got roped into being the operations person for KVTP-LP in Santa Fe, who was granted their construction permit just this past February. And, but my background in theater and radio theater goes much prior to that. I used to produce 11 shows a week for KSFR radio station in Santa Fe. And I had the privilege of working with some of our theater troops and writers from the Santa Fe area producing radio dramas. Everything from a half-hour radio drama that we aired weekly, which was called Space Station Santa Fe. It was effects heavy, effects library heavy. It was this mad adventure of Dr. Mad Hatter and his wild adventures through his spaceship going through Santa Fe. And so it was an ongoing series, almost like a soap opera, done in that old-time soap opera style. Then I went into one of the programs that we had on the air was called Living Treasures, Santa Fe Living Treasures, which were a tribute to our elders of Santa Fe. And as a result of that, I started working in docudramas, which are documentary dramas on these people's lives, and building effects and two-hour pieces of work to be shared, a tribute of their lives. And so I learned very quickly how to operate very quickly in producing these shows. I had 30 hours to produce 11 shows a week. And so I did rely very heavily on sound effects, a library of sound effects. But for special performances, we would open up our studios and have live audience as well as live participants, almost like a Foley situation where we had our performance artists there, our actors up on stage, playing out the radio drama with the scripts and the holding the ear and the whole nine yards. So.
We forgot to hold our ears.
Soup to nuts. It's a real pleasure to show and share some of the tips and tricks that I learned in preparing all of that.
Hi, I'm Betty McArdle from Portland, Oregon. I'm with Community Media Assistance Project.
CMAP,
which was born because, well, another piece. I am married with Michael Brown of Brown Broadcast Services, which some of you have had experience with in this last window. And actually, after the first LPFM window in 2001, after the window had closed, several people said to him, I wish I'd known that window was open, I would have applied. So we swore to each other, we don't want to ever hear that again. So CMAP was born to do outreach to community groups, let them know when there was going to be a window. And it has evolved into doing work beyond that outreach. It's one of the things I think I'm most experienced and good at is looking at applications for mistakes and incompleteness. I was doing a database project, and I looked at 3,000 applications, and some were just garbage. So I also like to do that to help folks out. Now, what does that have to do with radio drama? Well, let's go back, 62, 3 years. When I was just a little kid at my daddy's knee, he was a radio engineer at KEX in Portland, Oregon. And they did live radio production right there. They had a big studio. And, you know, back in those days, the radio stations did do a lot of live programming and had big studios with audience and music and all that. So I saw a lot of that and just loved it to pieces. Bounce forward a little bit. And in the more recent years, actually, I guess it's been 35 years ago, I've got 10 years of experience of on stage doing various kinds of plays and musicals and dramas and tragedies and the whole thing. Now I have to come to where I admit that I've never done a radio drama. But I've got Donna here to help me out. But, you know, I just wanted to do this with Donna because we just got so excited about how fun it was going to be. Mm-hmm. So that's who we are.
And so from there, we decided to share with everybody how to do this. Okay. So generally it does start with an idea. Yeah. And when you have an idea, you're going to want to start making some notes about that idea. And that is, I did not give a form to that because no idea has one form. So what you do in the way that you collaborate or coordinate your way of thinking and writing is totally up to you. Okay, you can build that structure yourself. How you structure it for radio, I do have some forms for it. So what we do, you have your idea, you write it down, and then the first thing you're going to want to take a look at is our casting. Let's take a look at the script, the finished script, program proposal, and script.
All right.
I have incorporated some of that formulaic work into this, again, for purposes of defining your program, how you want to define your radio theater piece. So when we take a look at it,
just
this is...
Sure. We've got a lot of experience in the room. So
right.
If you find a time when you'd like to add something or...
Please, yes.
Or whatever,
yes.
Call us down on something, please,
yes.
Jump in.
Please do. So one of the things you want to do is you want to start building the characters, right? Is your character happy? Is your character sad? Is your character lonely? Are they riding a horse? Those kinds of things. This is where you start your brief character descriptions on your first page. Okay? Just a little bit of background. Was she born a poor left-handed Italian-American? Or, you know, we actually opened one radio drama about an amazing photographer who was a Santa Fe living treasure. Mm-hmm. Who was a World War II Germany refugee, got to the United States. Everybody found out he was German with this thick accent, very rough childhood, very up in New York and in the Bowery. Wound up learning photography and becoming like the most asked for photographer in the 40s and 50s for all the stars. And so we covered his 20th century through this. And it was, I was born, it was a bleak, cold winter night. You know, I was born in such and so Germany. So you can start from that kind of beginning. You can start from a background, but you want something that your listeners are going to relate with. So you build that into the speech.
Question. Mm-hmm. Now you're talking about doing a docudrama.
Right.
So when you're building that character, are you just describing the person that really is?
No.
Or was?
No, no. In playwriting for radio theater, an example would be this Mad Hatter doctor that we had with his crazy spaceship. This person was a very normal, everyday kind of person, but you build the persona. So that character, that voice character, can actually adopt that persona, because that's what it's about when you get into character. When you're interviewing for that kind of speaking part or that kind of role, you want to share what their take is, but you want to have a good explanation to share with them first so they can start adopting that character. And that's usually what your rehearsals are all about. He come in, he was straight waist cut hair guy. He come in, he had dreadlocks and a hat and a crazy coat and just to go on mic. But that's what helped him to become the character. So that's what you want to include when you're asking and developing your own character work, right? So there's your outline for that. And then we go on to your second characters, okay? Right here we have two characters. Here's a 14-year-old. That doesn't necessarily have to be a 14-year-old. That's the sound in this. That's the sound that you want. Now, I did a radio play on anti-bullying. And it was called Bullyproof Shields. And the way they lined it up was that it was an acronym. Bullyproof was Brave Bear and Understanding Unicorn and, you know, Listening Lynx and all of these great characters. Unfortunately, I left them on my dresser or else I would have played it for you. But we had four people voicing all of those characters. So they need a tack to go by, right? They need a cue to go by. That our listening lynx was also the brave bear, so she knew when to change her voice, right? And we even had a point where she was casting against herself. She was playing against herself. And it was great. It was great because she could see it in the cue sheets when she had to change it, and she would mark her sides. Okay.
Mel Blanc used to do all the voices in those cartoons.
Right, right, right. And you know, Mel Blanc was a master at voice changing. So you don't have to have one person per role, but you have to identify the role first. And the more information that you could share with your potential cast, the more they're going to be able to interact and relate with that character to adopt. Right? So you get that outline taken care of, then you start going through and you start reading the storyline. Okay, so here are the writer's notes. Let's flip the page over to the rough draft of an outline of a radio drama. Now what I've done is one of the things that you want to do when you're organizing a your own creation here is you need to think like a stage director. In a lot of respects, like a stage director or an audio engineer also is another way to look at it. When you're writing out your script, it's different than writing out the play. The play is the storyline, the body, the flow, all of that. Whereas the script is the defining moments that happen while that tape is running, or that's how far back I go, while you're recording. Okay, or while you're on the air. So this is what an average script would look like with just standard straight effects. Always use a different color when you're doing your engineering notes. That's why it's in red. Okay, and then all the stuff in the black is what is supposed to be going on the air. Okay, then you have your music A, your music B, your action themes. Then you have a sounder, right? In the blue, you have a live sound effect, okay? Some people change the color of that. I like to keep it in continuity because as a production specialist who had to produce 11 shows a week, all I cared about when I was producing that part was my red notes. That was my responsibility. The actors and the players were responsible for everything in black. Okay? And as an engineer, if they made a mistake, the only thing, two things I was looking for was the script. If they made a mistake, they dropped silent, pick back up so I can blade edit out whatever the mistake was. Or, well, we don't have to do that now. It's much easier to do it with Audacity and you can just cut it out. So when I would prep the players, I would have them read through the script, at least dry run once, you know. Usually the producer already had rehearsal times at the house, they already had the idea, they would come up with the sound effects that they want and give me their order. And their sound effects order, I would go get all the sound effects lined up, add them where they're supposed to be, at least numerically, right? Same thing with the music, that's why it's A1, A2, all that. That's all you need on the engineering side of it. And the effect should fall right in. Sound, it should be sound one, sound two, sound three. And when you're producing it, you line all of those effects up at the same time, right? Music first, sound effects second. So they go through, they read it. I usually give them, one take nowadays is all you really need if you're pre-recording it, because you do have the magic of Audacity. I used to give the instructions while I was showing them how to behave. Well, not behave, but take cues in the studio. If you make a mistake, drop silent, count to two, pick up right where they left off. That's something that people tend to get nervous about, that they have to start from the top. No. Nowadays, we can stop pretty much where you started faltering. We have the technology to be able to do that, so it makes life a little bit easier. To do, and you can usually get things done in one take, right? So this is the body of the play. We're getting into the characters, building up their little story, right? And then we have little background sounds happening. Your engineer, your audio producer is going to want to pay close attention to each of those cues. Right. Knock on the door. Exactly. Right? But if you notice, you have this distant in character four on page two is a distant thing. So that would be if the microphone was, like this was the microphone here, a distant could be, well, what about me? That would be away from the mic. It sounded distant. Or you could have them step away down the studio in the background.
Especially if they're walking toward the mic, to sound like they're walking toward you.
Right.
They start over there, and they walk toward you, and their voice comes louder and louder.
As they come closer to the pickup pattern. So far, so good? Mm-hmm. Any questions? Anything you'd like to add?
Well, I was just thinking about, the difference between doing an original work and taking something that somebody has already done and adapting it to radio drama, because if you're doing something on the radio, it's different than if you're doing it on the stage. Mm-hmm. And if you're taking a piece of literature and turning it into a radio performance, it's going to be different. And then there's also rights issues that go with using other people's work as well.
Very much so. The clearances for spoken word are not protected under the DMCA.
What's that?
Digital Millennium Copyright Act, I call it the starving artists bill legislation. So when you are deciding on plays, if you're not crafting them yourself and originally producing them, your producer needs to be well aware that there are copyright clearances that they must get in writing.
Harry Fox Agency has almost all of them.
Harry Fox is the big one.
Harry Fox
is the big one.
Has the
for the drama stuff. If you want the rights, yeah, contact the Harry Fox.
So is that
performance rights?
Do you do like book adaptations? And
book adaptations is different. Then you got to contact the publisher.
Right.
But this is the rights.
This is for drama.
Radio drama. Right. Now, some of these, I believe some of these sites.
A little follow up, Norm. Does that also apply to scripts that are in the public domain? Like some of those old time radio scripts?
Yeah, well, if this stuff is in the public domain, it's in the public domain. Yeah, I'm talking about stuff that's. But
that you have to pay.
It's always good to start with contacting, you know, Harry Fox Agency or the publisher if it's a published book, just to see, you know, are there performance rights for this piece on the radio?
And then the other thing that we used to do, which I was introduced to by Dorothy Doyle, who was just this marvelous, marvelous mentor, who would actually bring the author in.
Oh, wow.
So that was implied permission to use it. And so they would have the author, she would have the author introduce the play and discuss a little bit of the background. And that's the implied permission, and then say, okay, away we go. So there are a couple of creative ways to save a few dollars, and also to save yourself and protect yourself from a lawsuit. Because they will, especially Fox, they get pretty pushy about wanting their, you know, their fees. So,
by the way, just as a quick aside, not exactly on this, but did people see the suit that's been filed against Warner Brothers for all the money they've collected for Happy Birthday for the last
how's that going? Did they win?
It's in the courts now. I don't think they've won yet. But the question is whether Warner Brothers is going to have to do some kind of, you know, settlement with everybody that they've collected money from for the supposed copyright of Happy Birthday for the last 5 decades.
50 years. That's great. That's great. So those are the kinds of things as a producer that you're going to want to pay attention to when you're lining up things. That's one of the reasons why, again, like Betty and I opened with, this is a really good idea to have your own theater troupe, your local playhouse. Usually that's where we got a lot of our actors and writers from, was the Santa Fe Playhouse, which is a collective nonprofit agency. Check out your youth programs. That's another place. That's a real good place to get some resources. Most of your youth programs are original creators, so you do something in conjunction with them. You have those implied rights right there.
I'm a little nervous with this implied rights thing.
Well, you have the actual document that they are saying, we're hosting this and we would like to put this on the air. That's
And you get something back from them that says, okay, sure.
Yes.
Because implied was, bothering me.
No, they're physically on the air with you saying, this is our play, this is what we're doing, and take it away. You know, it's almost like the Johnny Carson introduction is the way we call it. So that credit is documented, that we have permission to play.
And not all authors actually own the rights to their works.
Exactly. So you have to check that as well. And that, again, that's part of the producer part. That's part of the producers.
So if we have a pretty sharp local writer produce and write stuff that we're going to put on, what do we do to copyright our stuff, or he probably knows.
He probably knows, and that's why you invite him in to help you with the script, period. You know, that's the way you do that. And because he's already in that arena, and you incorporate his skills and talents into the product that you want to create, he probably would be more than willing and happy to help you craft that, but you have to make it inclusionary, or else.
And there's a separate set of rights for the performance than there is for the published.
Right,
work.
From the published work. So you want to cross that over. at that point.
I'd like to hear Kelly describe the process of the group that you have, because I think it's a pretty interesting model. Of, it's not exactly drama per se, but it's the same concept of bringing together a group of people to work on a project.
Yeah, I mean, I guess relating it to this is that there's a defined theme that's broadly defined, and it might be something big like, we often take like phrases. But let's say we did it on romance, and then I've got these writers that are really come out of power. They'll write script, they'll write sketches, poetry, prose, essays, short stories, but they can come at that theme any way they want.
Right.
And then it gets critiqued by the whole group. And then so by the time that they come to my studio, I know what changes they should have been made, because I also have a copy of the script. And then so then they get in front of it, read their piece, and then I produce. And then we have a co-producer who writes the introductions to each piece. So that they kind of thread, there's this thread that goes through the whole show. And then it gets, there's a host who also does the reads the introductions. But it's a process, it's like 15 people, you know, that goes into, those 15 people are at your mic.
Once a month.
Yeah.
Once a month.
On a different theme each month.
Right.
But,
right.
Getting back here, you have nine characters. I always kind of have the rule of thumb of six being kind of the...
Yeah.
Because you got to keep track of who these people are.
Right.
Based on their voices.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Only in their relationship to each other.
Right.
And I don't know if that's just a general rule of thumb, or if you can do, you know, a young John and an old John.
Right.
You know, that those would be two different voices.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But maybe like the same character, or you know, the same person,
different voices. Right. And that is a rule of thumb, at least from what I recall when I was producing these radio dramas. I think we had seven was the limit, because number one, the studio capacity, and that's always an issue with your studio capacity. And the thing is that you. In most radio production work, you're not dealing with a full soundstage studio where, audio-wise, you can have somebody on Monday do one piece and on Thursday do another piece. Each time you walk into a recording studio of any shape or form, it changes. It changes from morning. The pickup of all the equipment changes between morning and afternoon, whether it's raining, whether it's not raining. And that needs to be taken into consideration, especially from an audio engineer side of things, is that I can tell when something was recorded at one day, and then you could use the same mic, the same setup, same everything, and on the other day it sounds completely different. For a tuned ear, it's real hard to make it match. So that's one of the reasons why the radio dramas need to be done probably no more than 2 hours is it for your finished product. So your recording session, for the most part, you want to try and have done in one day. One shot, one day. It's easier to manage that way. It's also easier to get it into editing. And you have the continuity of the sound of the whole body of work right there. Would you agree?
Yeah. You can also do live performances on the air.
Mm-hmm.
My husband, who was here a little while ago, and I built a radio station in Round Mountain, California, which is near Redding. And just before we finished, actually, I mean, it was... good enough to go on the air, but there was still work to do. A troupe of seven people came in and did a live play for an hour. And sure, there were some flubs here and there, but they just had the greatest time. And of course, the people in the community loved it.
Mm-hmm. It's a real... the other thing about radio dramas that I'm not sure, maybe you have, Norma, at work, is it makes great fundraising opportunities. You can do for membership drive and you know whatever way you want to phrase it for raising money for the radio station. If you make a special presentation like that, especially live in a studio, it really can help bring in, you can sell tickets to it, you can do all sorts of things that bolster not only the efforts of the actors and the players and the people involved, but it also introduces the public to the radio station and the radio station to the public. And that makes really good ambassadorship of what community radio stations are about and what community radio is supposed to be about. So that's another little tactic that you can use. So you don't have to do, if you're just starting out, you don't have to do every week with that space station Santa Fe. It was every week, half an hour, boom, boom. We did that for, I don't know, about 2 years. It's exhausting work. It's exhausting work. Fortunately, I had a team of very talented people, and I was young and dumb and strong enough to do it. So you can do something. You can do a winter presentation, okay? You can do something that's non-denominational over the winter. Do a winter festival, you know, the day the snowman came to town, or something along that line. That's multi-generational, that's multicultural, that's, you know, multifaceted for that time of the year. And that makes an engagement performance that you can open up the studios, have an open house. Everybody remember Dinner in a Movie? Has anybody ever done Dinner in a Movie?
Oh, well, sure.
It's a marvelous way to raise money for your radio station. So dinner and theater, dinner and drama. That's a real great way to raise some money and bring the public in, and they experience something tangible that they'll remember. Wow, we had such a cool dinner at this radio station, like Betty just said. Mm-hmm. We were just at this radio station. Okay, so that's a way to raise awareness.
Another thing that is interesting, it brings some of its own problems with it, but also some benefits, is a serial drama. So, yes. I remember there was that science fiction one, Ruby.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but, you know, that gets serialized over a period of time, and you get listeners kind of caught up in following it and brings people along. And now, with the Internet, you could even, like, do the serial and then post it. Serial mm-hmm. episodes on your website or something. Mm-hmm. Again, depending on rights issues, of course. The problems that it brings along is that you're not recording them all at once,
right.
You know, keeping the consistency of the cast and
right.
the studio
right.
and so on and so forth. So,
right. So those are just some of the basic strategies that you can do with the product as well. You know, it's always good to have an open casting call. That's one of the things I used to love doing, because we could open up the studios and, you know, milk and cookies. I mean, not milk, but you don't want milk and then go on the air. But it's a real engagement. It's not just about me and my work and my little, you know, tapping away, tip, tip, tap at the typewriter. It's a broader opportunity to share with the community as a whole. So when you're writing the script, you want to break that down? You want to keep that kind of stuff in mind? How big do you want to go? Or is it something you pre-produce and slip on the air? Or do you have it live? Do you do an anniversary kind of show? Those kinds of things, any kind of special kind of things, you're going to want to invite the audience in. You're going to want to have that live feel to it, because it the players and the actors need that also. Mm-hmm. That's part of their thing. There was nothing like working a melodrama when you had an audience that didn't understand what a melodrama was, and they all sat there very quietly. You know, I always had fun when they were booing the hero and hissing at the booing the hero and cheering the villain. And I mean, we go full board nuts, popcorn thrown at you, you know, the whole nine yards. You come off that stage a mess. You can do that, create that audio wise also. It's just the tone in which you said it, you know.
Well, one thing is to think about the various, excuse me, lengths that you might think of. You might want to be doing, I want to share with you in a little while, a 5-minute mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes less of everything that Donna's been talking about to do.
Mm-hmm.
And can be a lot of fun, particularly for a serial, five-minute mystery. You have one each week, and it, in that case, it wouldn't matter about the voices and stuff because it's a new mystery each week. A half-hour show, an hour show, recorded, live, downloaded. There are lots of options for ways to do some radio drama.
And so you're from the V.
How many people remember Chicken Man?
Oh, my goodness.
It's a serialized radio thing in the late 60s.
Early 70s.
Out of Michigan originally. But it was just this like sort of takeoff on the old crime drama things.
You know, I was listening to some acid rock at that time and missed out on Chicken Man.
One thing I think that, you know, you want, it's quite different to write a script for stage and then, you know, and then for radio. And I think that what I'm going to do with this group that I'm working with is that they're the critique group, not me.
Right.
And don't, you know, don't right. take that upon yourself to be the, you know, find the reviewer and the editor that it should. I'm as a producer, I want the script to come to me clean,
ready
and
to go.
Cleaned up and edited and critiqued and all that worked out so that when that troop is in front of your microphones, they're ready to go.
Very much.
And you're not doing any of the, like, no, wait a minute, this doesn't work because we're right, this is radio,
right.
We can't, you know, we're not performing. So I, in this case, I got a playwrights group that structure is already there.
Right.
You know,
right.
And that's their critique.
Right.
And then those people who don't make the cut, they can resubmit their scripts.
Right, over and over again.
You know,
absolutely.
Until you get to a form of where it works for radio. Because it's really, you can really, you know, I've been doing this for radio long enough that it's, there's just some things that just don't work on the radio. And you
exactly.
just got to know.
Yeah.
But
exactly.
Rather than going through the whole process, you say, you know what, this just doesn't work.
Right. And it's okay. That should not be perceived as a rejection. What it should be perceived as is an opportunity to improve the message and method. That's the other part of it. When you're specifically with the startup stations, you want a review process for everything that's going on the air. And it's not just by one person. You know, it's very important because I can give you an example of what I thought, and I was very young in radio at the time. It was a classic public radio station at the time, and we had classical afternoon, and I was still at the classical stage because I had gotten through, there were rites of passage that you could get through before you could do what you wanted to do on the air. And part of that was paying attention to your program director's instructions for the day. And the broadcast day was, you know, calendar schedule was set by him. And so he had Dutch Composers Month. Okay, and we had to go to class to learn how to announce the names
in
Dutch.
Yes.
So I get on the air, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I get on the air, you know, I announce a name that's got 4 syllables and 22 characters, you know, kind of thing. Put it on the air, it sounds like dead geese. I mean, it's like, you know, somebody's massacring dead geese or some nonsense. I come flying out of the control room, and I'm running into his office, and I'm like, what is this shit you're making me play? You know, he's like, ah. You know, he was a great composer. I don't care. I don't care. This sounds like shit. And he's like, no, this is going on the air. This is the way it is. I go back into the control room, and sure enough, the light's going off on the phone. I pick up the phone. Listeners on the air. What am I hearing? Thank you so much for playing this piece of music. It reminds me when my wife and I were celebrating our 20th anniversary in Vienna, and I surprised her with a trip to this concert, for she loved this composer and artist, and blah, blah, blah. You know, the whole life story. So do not, and you're absolutely right, as a producer, you should not be emotionally engaged with the work. And you should have it cleared by a committee and a group. Because what my opinion is my opinion. What your opinion is yours. What hers is hers. What works for you may not work for me. But what works for that group is what's the most important when you're producing any kind of work, any kind of airtime, period. But in plays and radio dramas, most importantly.
You know, I was just thinking of an aspect that we haven't really discussed yet, and that is the aspect of shyness and maybe embarrassment or something, because they say that the thing that people fear the most is speaking in public. And being in a play, a live play, mm-hmm. is speaking in public. But radio gives you some anonymity. Mm-hmm. They're not going to see you. Mm-hmm. Not going to see anything that you might be embarrassed about your appearance. And so that gives a chance for another whole group of folks to be able to get involved in performing.
Yeah. And part of making those groups of people a little more comfortable is how easy you make it for them to perform. One of the policies that we had, I don't think that it's a practice more than that, was that all of our performers, the only thing that they ever had to deal with was their microphone and their script. And we had a behind-the-scenes team that would take care of pretty much everything else, because some of them were experienced and some of them weren't. Yeah. And the ones that weren't experienced, they would get in, and all they had to focus on was their script and how close they stood to the microphone, to the point if I had to put a piece of tape on the floor to give them a mark, I'd put a piece of tape on the floor to give them a mark. And that's all they had to worry about. And it made it so easy for them that they actually were more engaged because they were comfortable, you know? And so that's another way of engaging the rest of the audience, both players and listeners.
I just had a question. When you said, like, you just wanted to be ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
So the writer's going to do the best job and it'll go through whatever that editing process is. But what about the actors? Are there rehearsals? Are they rehearsing
yes.
in the studio with you guys or on their own? Or
on their own. For me, it was on their own, and then they would bring it to the studio after they felt rehearsed.
Okay.
Why don't you talk about the role of the director?
Yeah, I was going to say, is there, because I hear you guys,
director,
there is a director.
Okay. There's a team that's kind of hovering over the actors. You know,
okay.
But I think a lot of writers want a director, want one more person mm-hmm. removed, mm-hmm. you know, kind of
mm-hmm.
look back and
okay.
And I let that be their choice.
Like the writer's choice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you want one? Do you want me to be the director? Do you want to direct yourself?
Right.
No.
Right.
It's the cheapest question I've ever been in theater. If you don't need the timing between the cast, you rehearse alone. And she asked the question about, rehearsing.
Together on their own.
Not any valuable time.
Any actor.
I was really confused about how anyone would have any actor.
See, it's actually, in my opinion, it's a little bit easier in radio drama because you don't have to remember all your lines and your sides and your cues.
Yeah.
You've got paper in front of you, right? But any actor, even in radio drama, or any DJ should be rehearsing anyway, period.
Yeah.
Period. No matter what they're doing.
Yeah.
Driving down the road, I remember, you know, starting out, even when I warm up now to go on the air, I'm rehearsing.
Yeah, everything I've done has been a solo gig, me and my
right.
sound sources.
Uh-huh. Right,
so
sure, sure.
I'm not used to collaborating with others and
you'll get there.
My mark.
Yeah. You'll get there.
I may
You'll
or may
get
not.
There.
I got so much to do there. But
right.
I'm excited about you guys doing it.
Right. Right.
Okay. Well, that is a laudable.
So getting to the directing part, we have Radio Skills School. That's a combination of directing, protocols, best practices. Okay.
Sibilance.
Sibilance. If you get a chance, I have a little, Otis McClay and I did a Pacifica training film. that's floating around. I think it's up in the media center up there that you'll want to take a look at, about sibilance. Generally, your voice is as big as your hand spread. That's as big as your voice with the microphone. So whenever you're at a microphone, that's about how far away you want your cast to be. And unless they, getting big and boomy or screaming or something like that. But that's your alignment when you're producing. If you're actually, the engineer, that's a good proximity. What it does is it keeps a close, even barrier, even pickup. Okay? So Radio Skill School is a way for beginners as well as, some of us old hats who forget about things sometimes. Those are some of the things that you want to look for when dealing with microphones. Again, never tap a microphone.
Is this on?
Yes. Now, one of my mentors, especially in engineering, actually took a Shure microphone and drove a nail into the side of the wall, turned it on, and it worked.
Well, sure.
An SM58.
Jammed good.
Boom.
Stuff.
Hi, we're on the air. I was like, wow. Don't do it. You're not, The gear on these budgets, he had a big budget. He could do it. If he broke it, he broke it. Or could fix it and take it off to the bench. But these are your instruments. And so they should be treated with that kind of respect, Then with the actors, you want quiet in the studio, right? Laughing, la la la. Again, these are ways of just people management as well as good studio practices for any time you walk onto any call letter property, pretty much. Now, the radio direction sign language, that is something that has become a forgotten art because now we have digital editing and we can fix stuff up. But when you're doing a live radio drama, I'm sure, do you still use hand signals?
Yes.
Yeah. So here's a basic outline for hand signals. This is a, shall we say, a standard that's used, wait, 5, 4, 3, 2. Everybody should shut the heck up at 2, right? And then drop is 1. And that means you're hot. So 2 is, the engineer is usually bringing all the mics up or everything that needs to be up. So it might even be held at a 2. And then drop is when you can start. Everybody should be exhaled, ready to rock and roll. Okay? Then you've got rap or quick in the pace. Or quick in the pace, either way. This is rap. Delay or stretch it.
Stretch it out. Keep talking.
Right?
Keep talking.
Louder is pull on the ear. The old Carol Burnett. Pull on the ear. Or quieter, right? These are all hand signals from the glass, which we can play with over at KHOI if you want. Cut, or I used to do cut, right? Because I don't like slitting throats. I'd much rather,
They're looking at you.
Right.
This is another training issue. Yes. Right. Look at your engineer.
Right. Make sure they're looking at you. Right. And then back off. Come closer. Those are hand signals between the glass, right? So that's how you would do your hand signals. So if somebody wants to tell me to come closer to the mic, what would you do? Right. I'm too loud. Much easier. But yeah. You're going to establish your own signals, but these are the basic ones that you you can use in there.
One thing that I think is most advantageous was, do you keep it clipped?
No.
Do a turn in or drop a good page?
Drop. I prefer a drop.
But then you've got the sound. You've got to let that happen. The sound of the page.
But it's further away from the microphone.
It's much further away.
I agree. I think you got to give that cue. Like, everybody has to do the page.
Yeah.
months.
Right.
And also that you include, don't have like a sentence continuing on.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. You give them a, right. You want to shorten your margins. Yeah.
No orphans and widows.
Right. Right. You want to complete the sentence, and you want to have a margin, a higher margin or a wider margin. So there's a big enough pause to get through it. But it should the script should fit the train of thought, character thought on that one, you know, on the page. So whatever that line is. If it's spilling over, then start a fresh page on it so you get the pacing. You don't mess people's pacing up. That's a really important one. So then when you're doing casting evaluations, right, you're gonna say, well, you know, I wanna do this, I'm gonna do that. You already have your outline. Again, this is another opportunity to refine your idea. That's why I said there's no written outline. And the reason is there's so many ways that characters come to life that I don't want to constrict anybody to just one method. But the casting is another place where you can start refining the character or continue refining the character. And that's by having them come in and talking about the character. So the casting monologues should be pretty much a background. This is the way you do the introduction to the character. You introduce the character to the player and let them read that. It makes it a little bit easier for the player to understand the character and how it relates to the rest of the work. And as you sit and you evaluate that, you can start getting the actors' names. How are they doing? Were they too bold? Were they too soft? Right? Did they play the way you developed the character, or did they improve it? That's always something good to have. If they've improved it, that's a good note that you want to put there. So there we are on that part of it. What shall we do next?
We have half an hour.
Okay.
30 minutes. Do we want to let them write a sample script?
Yeah, that's a great idea. That's a great idea. Let's get some paper.
I've got paper.
Yay.
So let's have this be one group and these three. You have to go.
We have to go.
Okay, then you two can write a script. Then the pleasure having you with us. Thank
you. Have you written scripts?
Oh, not.
Norm, have you written a script? You're gonna check them? Okay. Okay, so we have two and three.
You're leaving, Joe.
Let's give them the mystery. Let's give them the mystery to take with them.
I don't have clearance to do this yet, but I'm hoping that we get permission to do a 5-minute mystery tomorrow sometime during a plenary. And I would like to know if any or all of you are interested in doing that.
What do you do it?
At what time? Well,
evening plenary.
There's not an evening plenary, is it?
Afternoon. It's 5:30, I think.
Sunday. That he did. Closing plenary is 11:15 to 12:30.
We're leaving early.
Early. Okay.
Tonight?
Well, let's at least share the 5-minute script. So they have something to go by.
Okay.
Yeah, that way they'll see a little finished product instead of it all being instructions.
Yes.
Right?
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Here we go. Well, thank you for joining us.
Yes. Thanks. Are you ready to break up? I mean, it's early.
Can we just do it together? I mean, or is
okay.
I'm
okay.
In. Since it's just...
Okay, we have to sign. I no longer have a script.
Oh.
Let's see. Okay.
There we go.
All right. Thank you. Donna and I will share this one. So we've got 5 characters. We have an announcer who could be either a man or a woman. Sorry about the quality of this print. Jim Brooks, a young married man excited to be seeing an old college friend after 2 years. Eve Brooks is a dead body.
I can play that either gender.
Alice Mann.
I know, but I could do a great email on the silent.
On the radio.
Alice Manning, old college friend of Dorothy should be Eve and Jim Brooks, arriving by train to visit after 2 years. And then the policeman is a cagey older guy. I didn't mean old guy, older guy. Okay, how are we going to cast? There's only one female part, or we could have the...
So does Eve Brooks actually have...
any no lines.
All right,
no.
So she's... We never hear from her.
We never hear from her. Like the policeman can be a woman? Okay.
Right.
Would you like to be the
policewoman?
Okay. Who do we want for the announcer? Or who wants to be the announcer?
I suppose I could do that.
All right, we've got announcer.
Uh-oh.
Jim Brooks. Jim Brooks has a lot of lines. You should have spoken.
Oh, great. Who feels like
and talking? Alice Manning. Okay. Kelly, you want to be Alice Manning? Okay. I'll be the organ.
Who's Dorothy?
That's actually Eve.
Oh.
I made a mistake there.
Okay, so fill in. Eve, the dead.
The dead body. Eve is the dead body.
So is the role Eve in the script or Dorothy?
It's Eve.
It is Eve.
Yeah, I just didn't.
We don't want to have to change the name every time we see it.
I mean, Eve, Dorothy. Oh, Eve.
Like Eve.
Okay, so how about one of us is the organ, the music, and one of us is the sound effects.
Okay.
What do you want to be?
I'll be the sound effects.
I'll be the organ.
Okay.
All right, so we're ready to go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Oh, not one. No, say one. Let's be.
Another 5-minute mystery. See if you can solve the case before the end of the program.
Well, Alice, one more block and you'll behold the Brooks household.
Two whole years, Jim. It just doesn't seem possible. It's been so long. You and Eve married, and with a place of your own.
It's true, all right. Only too bad you haven't taken advantage of the old Brooks hospitality sooner.
Well, I'm here now, and I intend to have a perfectly wonderful time.
Now, here we are. Door closes.
Oh, what a charming place this is.
Eve's probably on pins and needles waiting for me to get you there. Here. Darling, it's Jim. Here's Alice.
What's it say? Jim, look!
What? Where?
There, on the living room floor. It's Eve! Dead!
Eve! Doesn't ever focus.
Okay. Mr. Brooks, I'm afraid you and Miss Manning will have to submit to some routine questions.
I'd be happy to help in any way I can, Inspector.
Thank you, Miss Manning. Now, Mr. Brooks, while we're waiting for some information, I phoned for. I want you to tell me what exactly happened this morning.
There's nothing much to tell. Both my wife and I were quite excited, expecting Alice, that is Miss Manning here, to visit us from Chicago. I was to wait until she called me at the office.
And you were alone all morning? And you were there all morning?
Yes, until Miss Manning's train arrived and we came out here.
I had written Miss Brooks to tell her that I would call Jim at the office as soon as I arrived. The train was an hour late. Maybe if it had been here earlier, I could have prevented this.
That remains to be seen. Apparently, Mrs. Brooks was sitting here in this chair, putting on some red polish on her fingernails when she was shot from behind The polish was spilled all over the carpet, and while she
was still holding
the tiny brush in her hand. Now, mind.
She must have recognized.
Mine's gone.
Yeah. She must have recognized her attacker.
Okay. Trade scripts.
Disappearing scripts.
Okay, here we go. All right. The polish spilled all over the carpet. And she was holding the tiny brush in her hand. She must have recognized her attacker, and since she did not die instantly, she printed these three initials here on the floor with the polish. D-O-L.
C.
Or C.
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 D-O-C? I wish I could tell whose initials she was trying to reveal.
You sure you don't know anyone whose name would fit that?
Positive. I can't.
Oh.
Yes, Miss Manning, can you think of somebody with those initials?
Well, D-O-C spells Doc, and it's Mr. Brooks' nickname.
Why, it can't be.
Yes. Yes. Oh. Yes, Mr. Brooks?
I haven't been called Doc for over 2 years. It was a nickname I picked up in school. My wife didn't like the name and never used it. No one in New York even knows me by Doc. You've got to believe me, Inspector. It's the truth.
Well, that we'll see. Just a minute. Hello? Yes. Grady? Yes, I see. Well, it's sewed up then. Thanks. Well, both of you will be happy to know our little murder is solved.
Oh, then it wasn't Doc after all?
No, Miss Manning, it wasn't Doc. I'm arresting you, Miss Manning, for the murder of Eve Brooks.
Why did the inspector arrest Miss Manning for the murder of Mrs. Brooks? In a moment, you'll hear. But first, this. And now, back to our story.
How dare you arrest me? I was still on the train.
Your train wasn't late, Miss Manning. That phone call just verified the fact. You came out here, murdered Mrs. Brooks, returned to the station, and called Mr. Brooks to pick you up. That wasn't what really gave you away, though, Miss Manning. Too bad you didn't know Mr. Brooks was no longer called Doc when you printed those letters on the carpet. The next time you leave a clue, a name as a clue to throw suspicion, you'd better get the name right. But, of course, there won't be a next time, will there, Miss Manning?
Whoa!
Join us again next time for another chance to solve a 5-minute mystery.
Woo!
Yay!
Yay! Well done, team. Wow. Well done. Nailed it on the first reading.
Yeah, there we go. So great. So any other questions, thoughts you want to share?
Who is the author of this?
It was a series of radio plays called 5-Minute Mysteries. So I grabbed it offline. Mm-hmm. Actually, I did a little fixing because it was a little bit stilted in the 40s or something like that. So I did a little fixing up.
So would something like this that you found from the 40s then be able, is that public domain? Is this?
That one was.
Okay. Right.
It'll say, when you look at some of the sites on the handout that we gave out, it'll tell you whether it's got, most of those are not going to have rights kinds of situations.
Okay.
Yeah, the ones with rights that you have to pay, Harry Fox, which just is an amusing name. Oh. But some of them will charge you a fee to use the script.
But that one was free.
Okay.
And then the some of the other, aside from Harry Fox, depending on the popularity of the play, is they will acknowledge your use also. That's the other part. They will send you a letter saying, oh,
you have permission.
You have permission to use this. So
it seems like newbies, this would be a better approach than trying to jump in writing something right off. Mm-hmm. Just practicing with, you know,
right,
like we did,
right,
with the script, yeah, already, exactly, there.
Yeah.
Let's
or exactly.
Maybe to just build up the rapport in the group. We have a really great writer who I think we'll jump up at this.
Sure.
If he doesn't, in the meantime, we should be working on some stuff.
Exactly, right, exactly. And what you may want to do with your new troupe is do some listening sessions.
Listening.
From these websites, do some listening sessions to develop style. You don't have to get into the body of the work, but you want to get into the technicals and that kind of thing, especially with a writer who may not be familiar with writing for theater.
Right.
Or writing
he's
for the
familiar for theater.
Or,
yeah.
Well, if he's
but
familiar
not
with
not
theater,
not
his work is much easier.
Some musicians in the studio, so
right,
this guy's going to have some
right
interesting.
Right. Right. So he won't be. He won't. He'll actually find the work, the writing work, a little bit more relieved, because he's not also property master, because you have
right
properties.
Yes.
But you have
right
sound effects with radio,
right,
and they're
yeah
very important for
right
for
yeah right
setting
it's
the stage,
mind,
if you will.
Right.
Theater
so
mind.
So it's replaced with, she has a blue ribbon in her hair too. She's got a clicky heel, so every
mm-hmm
step that she takes makes a clink.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
that kind of thing. So you build the character through sound rather than through properties, is what
yeah
they call it.
Props.
Yeah,
yeah, props. So
yeah. So ideas, you know, we kind of have a large group of people who seem to be interested, but when you have a small enough group involved with a typical production is 5 or 6, should we be rotating through, when we're not on the air yet, especially, and we're trying to work up
mm-hmm
the capacity and all? I'd like, if 20 people are willing to be involved, I'd like to kind of rotate through this,
yeah,
and try
you,
to get
you,
them all involved.
I,
but there is also this process you talk about casting with the best people.
That's the best way to do that.
Yeah.
That's the best way to do that. And if you want to take it into, shall we say, you know, the early childhood education model, where nobody's left out, right? Nobody,
yeah,
okay,
that's kind of what I was asking, is how do
right
I keep everybody's ownership and interest? And,
you set them to task. You set them to task. And so what you do is you say, we're going to make this a regular a weekly series for 13 weeks, and we're looking for teams that are going to rotate. And you can do it in a rotational thing where you have whoever your players were this 13 weeks, then becomes the producers of the next 13 weeks, then goes back into engineering for 13 weeks. That way, they get the full benefit of all sides of the microphone. That's a very engaging way, and it's non-exclusionary. It's very inclusive that way. And even if feelings are going to be hurt, no matter what, you're not ever going to be able to please anybody with your broadcast, period. It doesn't matter what you're doing. But you have this understanding, it's real consensus is what it is. Most people believe consensus means everybody has to agree.
No.
That's not what consensus is. What consensus is that we agree to work together on achieving a goal. That's what consensus means.
Occasionally, there's a situation where somebody is adamant, you know, they're blocking.
Well, yeah, that's borrowed authority. I hate this production, and I'm going home, and I'm taking my toys, and I'm leaving. There's the door.
Yes.
Yeah,
and when you're ready
to
come back in, when you're ready to behave like a civilized human being, a mature adult, you're welcome back into the fold. I don't ever like to throw anybody out the door to never to return again. Unless there is a gross miscarriage, you know, of attempting, you know, a threat at three things. Health and safety of the staff, health and safety of the license, health and safety of the broadcast, of the public. Okay. Any one of those three, you're gone. That's it. Gone. But Everything else is a minor infraction. And if you embrace it as a minor infraction as a leader, it makes it easier to diffuse that emotional connection or that borrowed authority. Right? I wrote this, therefore I'm going to do the 19 parts and I'm going to engineer it and I'm going to do it. I'm not giving anything up. You know, no, it doesn't have to be that way. But you have to lay that groundwork now in your policies, in your procedures for how you develop your shows. So, yeah, your troop, everybody's welcome.
And she said a very important word there. The next workshop I'm going to present at is called governance. And even within producing these shows, you need a certain amount of governance. Mm-hmm. And if you have ground rules, which can be called policies, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call them, have them up front, then when there's a brouhaha of some kind, you can point to the ground mm-hmm. rules and say, you know, here's our rules, right. and we all agree to them. And right. then if they say, I'm leaving, then you, what Donna said, when you're ready to mm-hmm. come back, we will welcome you.
Mm-hmm. I've relieved many volunteers, and I am not afraid of it. People are terrified of relieving volunteers of their duties or firing yeah. them. Mm-hmm. It is not that cut and dry. Just because you relieve them from being the star ace broadcast reporter who has a stutter to setting up lighting or something like that, it's a relief of duty, but it's not a dismissal.
Yeah.
And we need to evolve beyond this because it's very ego-driven. This industry is very ego-driven, as Kelly probably knows. How do you go about relieving someone?
I've kicked them several times out.
Right.
So, and it's, a lot of it is just that they're disrespectful of the group.
Right.
And me.
Right.
Then I just, that's it. And I'll just say, you know, they're in there because of those ground rules, like they'll try to skirt a critique process in mm-hmm. the back door without mm-hmm. any edits to their script.
Right.
And it's very clear that we.
It needs it.
Needs it. Yeah. And I just said, you know, this isn't for you.
Right.
Person.
Right.
You're a great writer, but you're not a good person, and you don't like the right. workshopping.
Right.
So just know that. And it's okay.
Sure. Yeah. And you know, one of the things in that aspect is that, again, you never want to say, oh, look, you know, you suck.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you want to say, hey, you know, this isn't working out. Maybe there's another opportunity somewhere else. How would you like to do a Broadway? Always work on a solution rather than the problem. If you focus on the problem, what happens?
They get defensive and
right. Yeah. And then what happens to the problem?
It's still there.
It gets bigger. It gets bigger, and it's still there. Right. So before you get to that confrontational point, and this is your class, so I'm the governance class, is you want to be solution-based, like you said, offering the opportunity to educate and inform and say, well, this isn't working, this is the way I see this as a producer, those kinds of things. You're going to meet that wall where you have to say, thank you, but no thank you. And you can be gracious about it. You don't have to hurt the people. You're hurting their feelings no matter what because they're not getting what they want the way they want it.
Right.
And it's just like dealing with a 5-year-old at that point. How do you handle it?
But it's got to be clear that the community station as a whole has empowered Kelly or whoever this producer is
exactly.
to make some decisions. It is not going to be this group committee meeting. Because
exactly.
You know,
because you don't like the way she edited
yeah.
something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not stopping the presses or flipping the switch,
yeah,
throwing you up the air because Kelly
group.
Added an extra sound effect. Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
People, you got to learn that. There is structure in here. This is not just freeform
radio.
Oh.
It's radio.
Yes, there's a big difference. There's a very big difference between community access and community radio.
Yeah.
And so the structure that goes in the
yeah.
show proposal, the structure that goes in each play outline or each series or each... I'm a big fan of a 13-week review of all programming. Because that's where you rid the radio station of entrenchment, which is you know, a new station is just as vulnerable as a very well established station like Wart, that's been there for 40 years or 38 years
oh,
now,
yeah.
some nonsense like that.
And
this entrenchment in the last Wart, Yeah. There's plenty of entrenchment.
In every one, right.
To the point that we had a station, we had somebody at a station who literally bequeathed his time slot and his show in a will to be passed on to the next generation. Okay.
Is that KABU? Because they sure try to do that.
No. I think it was Chaos. Oh. I think it was actually Chaos. And that is not what community radio is about. Okay. So if you imbue that into your policies and your procedures that every 13 weeks, there's no permanence. There is nobody permanently on the air anywhere. And that's from the people who are sweeping the street to your morning DJ. Usually your first morning DJs are the ones with they think they're the rock stars.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and this is off track of radio theater, but not so much. The rules apply.
Yeah.
Those rules apply.
Well, I should say guidelines. The guidelines apply.
Guidelines. Yeah.
FCC does rules, but you have to follow those.
Those you have to follow. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But your policies and your procedures, especially at new stations, you want a sense of growth and change. The only way that I could even create growth and change is by a 13-week review.
Which doesn't have to be simply about you continue this show or you don't, or it's an improvement plan.
Exactly. And it's not just you and me, why are we playing rockabilly at 4 o'clock in the morning? It's about, wow, how do we fix our programming lineup? Who do we have? It's a check-in every 13 weeks on how everybody's doing and how everybody's progressing, especially with new stations.
Right. Well, the woman who, say, is going to do our 8 to 11 show, she's going to be using pre-produced things that other people are contributing to and people coming in off the street for interviews, and we're all learning how to do all these things.
And at week 7, she gets into a car accident and is laid up in the hospital for 3.5 weeks.
Right?
Or is going to need physical therapy for the next year and a half and can't do it anymore. You want to have a graceful out instead of this. I'll tell you a great little story, and this is totally off the record. But when I crossed over, I was a lead announcer for quite some time. I used to do 3 half-hour newscasts live 3 days a week, 4 days a week. And I decided that I wanted to get into audio engineering before all this radio drama stuff and everything else. Now, we had a policy in place that you could go to review or you could request a change in what you were doing. And so I put in the request because I wanted to learn audio engineering. I was fascinated by crawling under boards and pulling cables and all this stuff and setting up sound design. And so we had this 13-week review. Our listening audience, even though they weren't attuned to it, knew that it changes. The season changes, same just, like TV and all of that, upcoming new season. So I had decided that I was going to recuse myself off the air, so I could go learn radio production. And we told people, I said goodbye, I said, you'll hear me, but you won't hear me, hear me through my work and all of this kind of stuff. About 3-4 weeks into this new position, we had phones ringing off the hook. Where's Donna? I'm going to boycott the radio station. Why is she not on the air? How come she's not on the air? Blah, blah, blah. And it was like, I had to go back on the air, cut a cart, right?
That's old cart.
A little spot. Yeah, no cart. I had to cut a cart. Explaining to the listeners that I wasn't fired. There was no reason to come down with pitchforks and torches and burn the station down, but I was actually doing something different, and that they would hear me, and
you
wouldn't hear me, and I requested it. I requested it. No, I did not. I really didn't, because we were not trained to have ego.
Yeah.
We were not trained to have ego. We were trained to do our job as efficiently and effectively as possible. And so we were equal.
To boot, so.
Huh?
You must have been an enjoyable person to hear at the booth.
I used to have fun on the air.
Because efficiency and delivery of information wouldn't have done that.
Oh, yeah. And I did. I had a lot of fun on the air, and people enjoyed that. I guess they could hear it in my voice. But it was amazing. It was really amazing. So, again, that works both ways. You know, you want to keep them involved. We had somebody in another workshop that was just saying, was asking about, well, my goodness, you know, we have a jazz strip going across. We were in programming. We have a jazz strip going across there, and we have nobody to fill in or replace that. And it's like, well, then what are you doing about your strip programming and your program review? And, you know, the look was like, what do you mean about program review? And it's like, well, you should have program review, because you can't build the trust with the listeners that every weekday between, you know, 10 and noon,
you can't deliver that
have
strip.
Jazz, and then you put heavy metal polka on. You're going to piss off your audience, you know? That's, you know, that's the straightest thing.
Unless you're opening minds, which I found isn't...
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That was great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Did that help?
Oh, yeah.
Excellent.
Extra discussion.
Thank you.